This week's episode is sponsored by Mike Dreidel Art and the Grindhouse Channel. Check out the links in the podcast notes for those two awesome sponsors, and you'll hear how they sponsored us by giving us some really cool giveaway in this episode. So, thanks guys, and enjoy the show.
Goddamn club, aren't I?
Michael Rennie was ill the day the earth stood still, but he told us where we stand. And Flash Gordon was there in silver underwear. Claude Rains was the invisible man. Then something went wrong for Fay Wray and King Kong. They got caught in a celluloid jam. Then at a deadly pace, it came from outer space. And this is how the message ran.
Hey everybody, this is Justin
and Anna,
and we're actually back this week. Sorry for what we missed you last week. Life happened and we got a little busy, unfortunately, but we're back this week and we're going to be covering two movies. We're going to be talking about last week's pick, Swamp Thing, and this week's pick, which is Anna's. And Anna, you can introduce your film when we get there. It's called Always Watching.
Will do.
Yeah, and so we'll start with Swamp Thing, so we're going to jump right into it.
And now our feature presentation.
Government agents, scientists, soldiers, master criminals, secret formulas, monsters and midgets. Adrienne Barbeau and the Swamp Thing, an outrageous pair in the incredible adventure that grows on you or all over you. The Adventures of the Swamp Thing. The comic book legend lives.
So, I guess I'll just start right with you, Anna. What did you think of Swamp Thing?
I mean, what can I say? It's a monster movie from the 80s. It's kind of cheesy, but, you know, it's not terrible for what it is. And I'm a fan of Wes Craven, and, I mean, this is not his strongest film, but it's not bad.
I totally agree. I think that it's a different movie for Wes Craven than everything else I've seen by him. I mean, don't get me wrong, he is diverse in his horror catalog, and even his like one or two weird non-horror, I'm going to try to be a legitimate Hollywood director movies. But in general, he is kind of diverse, but for some reason this one stands out to me as one of the bigger outliers. It's just something completely different. and it just doesn't feel very Wes Craven to me. And that's not necessarily a bad or good thing. I think it has more to do with the story than it does with him. He just didn't really take on a lot of, you know, comic booky, you know, stuff like this before. But Don, who picked this movie, basically said that this was his introduction to Swamp Thing, and he has an affinity for it because he then got into Swamp Thing, and Swamp Thing became one of his favorite, you know, comics and stuff. And even though the movie's quality is not the greatest, it's what got him into it. So I completely understand that nostalgia for it. But I also don't think it was a horrible movie. Like you said, it was a lot of fun. I mean, that's one thing that you can't deny. It's a fun movie.
Right. Just an aside, I think his most out there movie than any of the movies he ever did was this terrible little movie called Music of the Heart back in 1999.
Yeah, definitely. That's the that's what I meant about his I'm a legitimate Hollywood director movie. Because I think I forgot the name of it. I'm glad you brought it up because that was his attempt at becoming I'm not just a horror director. And it was awful. I only watched it after he passed away, so not very long ago. Just because somebody was like, oh, you know, he made a non-horror movie. I was like, oh, really? So I watched it. I was like, yeah, no, I'm gonna stick with his horror.
Right, but to his credit, he didn't write it. He only directed it.
Okay, well, and maybe, again, that might be part of the trying to show Hollywood that he could do other stuff. You know, he could take someone else's script and do something with it, but...
clearly, because he never did anything like that ever again.
No, yeah, so he obviously didn't prove to Hollywood what he was trying to, I don't think. Or maybe he proved to himself that it's just not what he was about. You know, maybe he didn't like it. I don't really know.
I have no idea, and we can't ask him now.
Yeah, we can't, which is a sad thing. But even if he was alive, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't get to ask him because he's not going to
die. That's fair.
But, yeah, so it's one thing. One of the things that I thought was really funny is right off the bat, there was a corny joke, and it set the tone for me. They're flying in on the helicopter, and the woman says, she says something about where the nearest restaurant is. And he's like, 100 miles to the city. If you're a human, but if you're a crocodile or an alligator, it's right where we land. You know, and I was like, oh, gee. And at that point, I knew what I was in for, which was fine. I mean, I'd seen the movie when I was younger, and I'd probably say when I was quite younger, like maybe in my preteens. And I don't think I've seen it since. So it was felt like it was brand new to me. And in that sense, it felt very 80s. It felt very... you know, monster movie schlock, but in the good way. I like schlock. You know, I like that kind of stuff. And so everything about it was fun. If not great, it was still fun. And that's really essentially my thoughts on the movie.
Yeah, I mean, me too, essentially. And like as far as schlock goes, I could go either way. And this one falls on the, you know. I like it, you know. It's not too bad.
Well, that's fair. That's totally fair. And, unfortunately, Don wasn't going to be able to make it on the podcast either time. You know, last week when we canceled, he wasn't going to make it, and this time he couldn't make it either. But that's okay. We miss you, Don. Thanks for the selection. It was a good one in that it was something different, I think, than a lot of what we watch. Because it's only horror adjacent, I think, more than horror, but that's okay. I think what makes it horror-ish is the monster creature is certainly creepy, the effect, and he does a lot of killing. of course, it's killing the bad guys, in a sense. You know, he's very much a hero, anti-hero type. Go ahead.
I think maybe the most painful part of the movie is when, you know, Arcane, like, tells Bruno, you're going to test this chemical, and then he just transforms into this crazy little midget thing right in front of us.
Yeah, that transformation scene was definitely, that was definitely kind of get it to that horror adjacent spot, too. Some of the effects were fun. Definitely part of what kind of puts it in the genre, I think. What else do you have to say about the movie? Any other thoughts? Any other interesting facts about the movie that you found? You said you had done a little bit of looking stuff up.
I've got a little bit of stuff in front of me. It was the first science fiction movie for Wes Craven.
Okay.
Which is, you know, I think if you're a Craven fan, you would know.
He's pretty early in his career. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not like early. It's not like Last House on the Left early. But, you know, this was what? This was the early 80s when this was done. So, I forget what year, or was it mid-80s? Well, maybe mid-80s. But, I mean, so he'd only been doing films for, 15, I guess that's not that early, 15 years. But for a guy who did movies for 30-plus years, probably close to 40 years, I guess that it still is relatively early in his career.
Some of the, like, revealing mistakes. When Jude and Cable are discussing the tree that Arkin's men's truck ran into, they look down at Swamp Thing's footprint, and a white pointed, like, toe shoe is clearly in the shot.
That's funny. I didn't catch that, but that's a nice little funny. And that probably shows, you know, when you get to that point of editing and you're saying, oh, well, I can't really take that out because I can't reshoot. I guess we're just going to let it go. Or they didn't notice it until after the fact.
Right. I mean, and they were bogged down by a lot of, you know, kind of like hiccups as far as filming goes. So, you know, there's all kinds of fun little stuff like that if you wanted to go back and pick it out.
Oh, that's cool. And so this is one of those films where you definitely could probably pick a lot of that little stuff up. And do you know any more about the hiccups of the film? Because I had heard there were a lot, but I didn't really read a lot about it. Was it in the production that they had a hard time? Was it in post-production? Was it in the actual filming?
I mean, some of them are just complete, like, goofs, like continuity-type problems. Like, when Bruno drinks the formula and shrinks, his clothes shrink right along with him.
That's true.
And, you know, when Swamp Thing first appears, he grabs Ferret and yanks him into the water, totally submerging him and soaking him, including his head. But a minute or two later, he's completely dry.
I always love those. Those are great. And I know that, like, during the actual filming of the movie, they had some troubles with stuff, and I know there were some budget issues and pushing limits on the budget and stuff. So, I mean, I guess that a lot of times that can show in the final product when you don't necessarily have the time to reshoot or the money to reshoot. It also can depend on how good an editor you have, I think.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, you know, Wes Craven, obviously, this wasn't his last sci-fi-esque movie at all, but I think part of the reason it is a bit of an outlier is that I don't think he was phenomenally happy with the final product, and he kind of didn't want to tackle something quite like this again. And I remember reading that he was not one of his favorite films that he did. So,
right.
So, I mean, that's completely fair. So what do you think as far as for you with this film, would you stash it or trash it?
I would stash it just for a laugh. And, like, my boyfriend was supposed to come on the show today and tell us a little bit of the difference between the comic and the movie, but he's at work, so he couldn't make it.
That's a good excuse. Work is definitely a good excuse.
Right, but I would be interested to, you know, stash it just so I can show him, and then he can pick it apart if he wants to.
That sounds good. And so is your boyfriend a big comic book guy?
He is. He loves the DC more than Marvel, but we actually just sold, like, all his DC comics because we're about to buy a bunch of, like, omnibuses so that it's just all in one book instead of, like, a bunch of, you know, weeklies.
Yeah, I think they, if you're actually going to read them, the omnibuses hold up a lot better on the shelf, you know. If you're just looking for the collector thing, it's different, but I think if you're actually going to, you know, read them, it's probably good for that realm. I pretty much, when I buy comics, which is not a lot these days, I actually do read a lot of them online and such, and downloading them you know, semi-legally on BitTorrent, but when I do purchase them, they're usually in the omnibus kind of format, or at least in a trade paperback, so that it's not, you know, something that'll fall apart on my shelf.
Indeed.
So, you know, yeah, and I sold off, you know, it's funny enough, I collected comics a lot when I was younger, and I sold off all my comics in college, just one of those I'm broke, I need some money things.
Right.
And the weirdest collection I had, which is like more than half of the comics I owned, were G.I. Joe, because I had a monthly subscription to it for like 8 years of my life. So I actually got them sent in the mail. But back when they actually used to do like subscriptions to comics that they sent you in the mail, the same way a magazine was. So that was interesting. And now I kind of regret that I got rid of them, because I got rid of them for way less than they could be worth now. So, but I think everybody has those regrets when it comes to selling memorabilia. So.
Yeah. I got rid of the ones I had too, just because I needed some extra cash. But it would not surprise you all to know that my collection is mostly horror-esque.
That's not surprising at all.
Yeah, I'm not a huge superhero fan necessarily. Mm-hmm. I love the Marvel movies, but you know, that's kind of where that goes for me.
That's totally fair. Well, and as far as my answer is Stash or Trash, I'd stash it as well. And probably for my reasons are pretty much, it's a good pick it up and watch it every now and again thing for a good, you know, it's fun. I think that I would have liked the movie even more if I watched it with a group. It feels like a good group movie. You know, some beer, some chips and soda and all that crap and goofing around with a group of friends. I think it would be a blast. So definitely would put it in the movie night kind of pile. So.
Yeah, and you could you know, do the MST3K treatment to it.
Oh, definitely. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of, if you know, not a lot, but at least a few to find of goofy commentary tracks, since nowadays with podcasts, a lot of people do those kind of commentary tracks with movies. So I'm sure if we were to look, there probably are a few on this movie. I would not be surprised.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we both stash Swamp Thing. So
yep.
Now we'll move into the next pick.
It's
your pick, Anna. Yeah, so why don't you introduce it?
All right, my pick for this week is Always Watching, a Marble Hornet story. Now, I had never heard of Marble Hornets until about last summer. My boyfriend and I were in Walmart, and he apparently had watched the web series and freaked out when he saw that they had made a movie about it.
Okay.
So, you know, we took it home and watched it, and, you know, not knowing anything about the series, I was satisfied with the film. Like, it's not a masterpiece by any stretch of imagination, but, you know, if you're just watching it purely to be entertained, I think it does the job.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was quite frightening, to be honest. I have some sound clips I'm going to play that you guys can listen to of Royal B, who was on a previous episode, who was going to be on with us, but wasn't able to because he knew a little bit more about the kind of the Slenderman stuff, and so he sent me some thoughts he had on the film and on Slender Man.
Hey, all. I wish I could be there, but I am here at work. And it sucks. But no, I am not only here to give you my review of Always Watching and Marble Hornet's story, but to give you a little background about the subject being involved, that of being the operator. Or as we kind of know him as, the Slender Man. One of my interests, I have many interests involving the internet, is digital culture, digital lore, digital legend. I know of certain forms of digital lore transcending outside of its confines into the physical world. It's rare, but it's happened. Stuff like Jenkum, being a subject in town hall meetings. The virtues and the evils of your child inhaling methane, created by themselves. I have also seen manga being created about the digital legend known as John Titor. Now, for those who are not familiar with John Titor, he was a time traveler who was sent from an alternate timeline to the year, our year of 1977, to pick up a computer, an IBM computer, which could read several different languages. The thing is, was his time machine, that of a footlocker full of electronics, could only lily pad or jump from time frame to time frame back to where he needed to go. So when he was in around 1999 to 2001, he was picking up trinkets and toys that reminded him of his childhood. And during that time, he talked to several different bulletin boards about his mission and about the future. I believe you can find stuff about the John Titor legend online. But the Titor legend, as far as getting into urban legend, modern day in real life, was a Japanese comic and a footnote in a independent pro wrestling promotion storyline. Slender has transcended them all. Slender has crossed public record, cross Japanese comic or pro wrestling. He has become the new childhood boogeyman. And with always watching the being the first movie, I will guarantee you there are two other movies out there that are being made about Slender. There is a movie being made that should be set late 2012. And just last week, HBO launched a documentary called Beware the Slender Man at South by Southwest. No one knows if it will be put on on-demand television or cable television. Everyone knows it's just a documentary of two 14-year-old girls stabbing a friend in the woods and saying it was the Slender Man's fault. But who is the Slender Man, you say? I'm glad you asked. Slender was created by Eric Knutson, who went under the name Victor Surge in the Something Awful forums. He was challenged to a Photoshop battle to make a creepy image. So what he did was he took an illustrator's doll in a suit, a stock image you would find any other place on the internet, and he Photoshopped them within old pictures of children in a playground setting, at a birthday party, what have you. And then he would add blurbs of a photographer or a journalist who would trip upon the image. And another blurb under the quote from that photographer or journalist stating that they were never seen again. This intrigued the internet community, and they started making their own. As I said before, I might have caught the images on Metafilter or Dig as a strange but interesting topic amongst their litany of other topics. I would trip upon, I wouldn't say Slender, but the operator in the augmented reality game known as Marble Hornets. It's a web series, but they used, back in the day, around 2010, they used Twitter, and I think Facebook, to augment the story a bit. And you followed it, and it added pieces of puzzle. The original story of Marble Hornets was that of a film student picking up another film student's tapes because he was interested in the film he was shooting on those tapes, and then realizing very sadly he had gotten in over his head, and finding out the reason why the original owner of the tapes had dumped them. The interesting thing about it was that it was not linear. You would get clips of the operator, and then you would get clips of the protagonist shooting a video, and then blurbs from the protagonist stating, "I don't remember doing any of this." And thus sets the legend of the operator. The operator, some say, is Thunderman. There is also a line of thought is it is Slenderman, but a weaker version of Slenderman, unstuck through time, and is working as one of his proxies, one of his minions. The Slenderman has two types of proxies. He has physical proxies and he has metaphysical proxies. The operator is a metaphysical proxy. The job of the metaphysical physical proxies, well, the Slenderman has been known throughout time, since as far back as ancient Germany, to steal children, to lure them in the forest, and to make them disappear. The metaphysical proxy's job is twofold. They are the expanse of his net, that's one of them, and to run interference. And Marble Hornets is sort of the recording of running interference. Now, the way the operator affects those with weak will is through sigma radiation. Sigma radiation causes abrupt changes in the people it affects. Now, children are susceptible to sigma radiation, and that's how Slender reels them in. You can survive Slender's advances, but the sigma radiation will scar you vastly mentally. There are some physical maladies involved with sigma sickness, but you will always, always suffer from paranoia, random blackouts, temporary to permanent amnesia, and the feeling of drowning to the point where you cough violently, and then to the point of coughing up blood. It acts sort of like regular radiation does, but on the mental being more than the physical. So, the operator is later on found out through several other augmented reality games who add to the legend. 12 tribes have found out that there are 36 metaphysical proxies called the Collective, and they are haunted by the one called the Observer. Every day, Hybrid, if I remember correctly, finds out that prolonged exposure to sigma radiation through physical proxies mutates them and turns them into metaphysical proxies of a lesser known value. This is represented by the Rake in Everyday Hybrid. There are cults of the Slender, which I think is represented in M.L. Anderson Zero, that is being investigated. There is another augmented reality game called Dark Harvest 00. I'm vaguely familiar with that one, but it does help expand the idea of sigma sickness being a scar onto the mental being. I highly recommend you check all of those out to further your knowledge of the Slender Man myth, and have a lot of fun too. I don't recommend watching them in one sitting. I know Marble Hornets is about 8.5 hours long. 10 if you add to the 2-yark hacking. Everyday Hybrid, I know there's a Wikia out there that gives a timeline. Everyday Hybrid has used the most social media out there. So not only were you watching via YouTube, you were following via Twitter, Tumblr, you were also looking to geocatch real boxes, explaining certain clues and images. Now, with all that being said, where does always watching fit in the whole augmented reality game setup and the whole legend of Slender Man? To be quite honest, it doesn't. Other than using parts of the Sigma radiation that affects the video equipment, the name of the operator, and the name of Marble Hornets, it has no relation to the mythos whatsoever. It's pretty much your standard found footage movie with a Slender Man mask on. I feel bad for Doug Jones. I mean, hey, it's great he's getting paid, but that was a waste of Doug Jones. He's thin enough to be the operator. But man, they did not understand what made a Marble Hornets great. It was the suspense that made Marble Hornets great. It was the paranoia of who to trust and how they found you and the clues that lead you, and then loss of total memory that you have to recollect your memory back on videos. There was no loss of memory. There was no amnesia in this film. So you really didn't have a good reason why you were shooting. And the reason they had given, being that, oh, it might want attention, and then killing the dog, really shows that they were at the wrong direction with this whole thing. They were even in the wrong direction at the 20-minute mark when they first showed the operator. Before they were even looking for the operator. The major thing about Slender and the operator is that if you see him in the picture, you have this obsession to look for them in other pictures. That obsession breeds paranoia, breeds hysteria. Hystericalism, hysteria. Sorry, coughed. But it breeds the brutal paranoia, the hysteria, and the later homicidal tendencies of its victims. You have people going paranoid and hysterical due to petty reasons outside of obsession of this figure involved. There were things in there that really didn't need to be there, like the first 5 minutes. One of the major things about it is you were learning about what was going on. You were not being handheld, but through the massive paranoia and the fright of these people, you were learning other things about not only the operator, or more about what their involvement with the operator is. I thought the mark was hilariously bad. I I think the reasoning for the mark is everyone didn't want to act like they were violently coughing and ill. And they thought that was over the top in their minds. By the way, Angus Scrimm makes a cameo in the asylum. While I'm thinking about it, Angus Scrimm's tall man was an influence for Slender. I think Victor Surge had said that Slender was an amalgamation of the tall man and the question, Victor Sage, where he gets his name, Victor Surge, from. Other things. Now, the constant fleeing was a part of the mythos. Your victims will always flee to other places, hoping to hide someplace or somewhere. But it just was, I don't want to say it was bad. It was just a found footage movie using Slender Man as a mask. That's it. It could have been any other urban myth. It could have been another boogeyman. Who knows? There is a nod to Marvel Hornets. If you look in the gas station scene, Alex Krellin is missing. Have you seen him? Alex Crowley has been missed. Alex Crowley is one of the characters in Marvel Hornets. I thought that was neat. Another thing that bothered me was it was shot like it was shot by Radio Silence. For those who are not familiar, Radio Silence was a couple of guys who did a lot of effects and have been known for doing movies as VCR. VHS, I'm not. I'm sorry, VCR. VHS. Their segment, October 31st, 1996. And then their feature link, found footage movie Devil's Due, which everyone would call the found footage version of Rosemary's Baby. This felt like a Radio Silence movie. And that's as far as it goes as a Radio Silence movie. The difference between them is with Devil's Due, there was a menacing force behind capturing all this footage, not only from camcorders, but from security cameras, news cameras, what have you. There was a reasoning behind using other cameras other than the cameras owned by the victims to tell the story. This was just, okay, we're telling the story through whatever cameras we have. Screw the explanation why that this is used. It doesn't infuriate me. It would bewilder me. It's like, well, if you want to use Slender and the Operator and the other proxies, why didn't you follow form like the other augmented reality? I guess they thought they were too good for it or not. I don't know. But to me, it just didn't feel like it contributed to the legend or even followed the legend perfectly. Slender and the Operator don't kill people. That's absurd. They make people disappear. They make people vanish. They place people in other places. But that was the extent. Their thing is more Lovecraftian. They drive people insane. And through the insanity of this person, they kill. They have homicidal tendencies. They have suicidal tendencies. This was just, if I was a stash of trash, I would trash. Because while it was good on its own, if we put in your generic boogeyman, using the digital lore was non-existent and made it a pretty bland found footage film. That's all I got. Thanks for listening. I've run too much time, so I hope you guys like it. Thanks.
Now, back to our show.
I have followed a little bit of the Slenderman thing because of those girls that, murdered, or didn't murder. I guess the girl lived. Stabbed up another girl.
She did live.
Yeah, she did live. So they stabbed up a girl, yeah. And there's actually a documentary coming out about that, about the Slenderman thing and about those girls. It's going to be on HBO. It was an HBO production. I don't know if it's actually going to get a theatrical release before it comes on the channel, because it was actually at South by Southwest last week. A friend of mine posted a review of it. Looks like an awesome documentary, so I will be checking that out. But I didn't know, on the other hand, about Marvel Hornets. My first experience checking out Marvel Hornets was this movie last week when I watched it for the first time. And I've actually since purchased the movie because I really liked it. So I rented it first, and then I bought it. I think it's a really decent example of how to do found footage the right way. There's a lot of poor found footage movies out these days, and I think this is a good one. It definitely had a little bit of that that throwback to the Blair Witch style, which I dug. I really like the cast. I'm a big Chris Marquette fan.
I like him a lot too.
And Jake, whatever the heck his name is, I watched the show Greek, and he was one of the main characters in that. So that was kind of cool to see him in something. Yeah.
And then there's the lovely Alex. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, he plays the same character he did in Greek. He plays a snobby rich guy. So I thought that was pretty funny.
That's true. I think he's also in Shameless.
Yeah, he's in something. I did see that he's in I just haven't actually seen him. I think he's actually in a couple of things these days. So I guess he's got more of a name than I know, but I don't really watch a lot of network television.
I don't either. I don't have cable.
I thought all three of the main actors were really solid in it. I really did. I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, I was going to say the actress is Alexandria Breckenridge, and she's she's becoming a bit of a scream queen. She was in this. She was in the latest season of The Walking Dead, and she was also in the first season of American Horror Story.
Yes, and that's where I knew her from, was the first season of American Horror Story. I watched the first two seasons, and I fell off. Not that I don't intend on getting back onto the show, because I do. Somewhere in that range, my wife stopped watching as much horror with me. So not because she hates it, but she likes it and then gets horrible nightmares. So she kind of walked away from anything a little bit more on the gory side. And when we started watching the first episode of Coven, the third season, it was like super gory in the beginning, and she was like, "Yeah, I'm just not gonna watch this." And so I just haven't gone back to it myself yet. I fully intend to. I've heard horrible things about the Freak Show season, although that intrigues me because I like kind of the whole Freak Show thing. So I do intend on watching the other seasons. But that said, she was really good in the first season, and I'm glad that she's getting some movie roles, because I like her. You know, she's definitely good.
I do too. I was going to say, as far as the American Horror Story thing goes, you could probably skip season 3 and you'd be fine. I mean, I know it's an anthology and they don't have anything to do with each other necessarily. Hmm. But, yeah, I think they're supposed to eventually run together at some point. But, yeah, the season 3 is kind of just meh. But
it's funny because
I
hear the opposite with some people. And honestly, I can think it depends on people's sensibilities. You like season 4?
I liked season 4. I did.
Awesome. And the most recent season, I watched maybe an episode or two, and I thought it was cool, but I just haven't watched the whole thing. So
I've not seen any of Hotel.
Oh, you haven't? Okay. I saw the first, I think, two episodes of it, and it definitely intrigued me. It definitely seemed like it was going to be, pretty gory as well. So I intended it to probably be something I'll watch on my own, out with my wife. But that's okay. She tends to, when she's sewing, which she does a lot because that's one of her favorite things to do, is watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia on repeat. So I know that show, like, by heart, and so does she. So sometimes I'll sit in the next room and watch, you know, one of my horror movies or something. So I'll probably marathon these shows at some point. But that said, going back to the movie, Slenderman as a actual concept is really interesting to me, how it's kind of a really cool example of, like, a modern folklore and how it, like, originated on, you know, the internet and has continued to just grow and grow. And, you know, Marvel Hornets calls him the operator because of licensing. But it's essentially the same character as Slender Man. And the whole concept of what he is and what he's become is interesting because everybody who does, like, a story or talks about him, it's a little bit different, which is totally like modern folklore. You know, it's cool. I really dig it.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, really awesome the way it's just kind of grass-rooted and suddenly it's just this phenomena.
Definitely.
I don't even know exactly, like, you know, who started it, you know. I have no
idea. Yeah, I can tell you. There was a picture contest. I want to say it was on Reddit, actually. It was either on Reddit or, like, one of those other – it wasn't. It was on somethingawful.com. And there was a screen capture thing or these pictures and they were supposed to, like, doctor them to make them whatever. And this guy who did them put a figure that kind of was, you know, became the Slender Man in the background of these pictures of, like, kids and stuff. And he submitted them, and they won this contest. And they were really creepy. If you find the original pictures, they're both black and white, and the captions are things like, you know, the picture is taken by such and such on such and such day. It was the last time they were seen, you know. And they're creepy. Like, one is a group of kids, and he's just kind of standing in the back. And the other one, they're both groups of kids. The other one is, like, on a playground, and he's kind of standing off in the background behind the tree. And they're very creepy pictures. And so I definitely see how it became something, and it just got picked up in the whole, like, creepypasta world. And that is kind of how it blew up. And the guy, smart as he is, who did it, of course I can't think of his name, he copyrighted the term and has made some money off of it. But he actually said that his biggest reason for copywriting it is that he didn't want people to take the story and do something with it that wasn't, you know, worthy of the folklore. So he's actually kind of, like, vetoed the use of it in several like, rather than taking the royalties, he said, no, I don't find this concept to be good, and I don't want you to ruin the character, so no. You know, so...
I think that's kind of lame.
Yeah, I do, too. I think the biggest reason, even though he says that's for, is probably just to make money. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And he has made some, so, you know, to his credit, you know, I mean... The character is just really creepy, and I think it's interesting to see what people will continue to do with it. I know there were a couple movies released in the last couple years, more the direct-to-video kind of world, nothing that I think did much theatrically. But I think it's only a matter of time before there's a big theatrical movie. I mean, kind of like the whole Krampus wave, you know, finally after a bunch of these ones that were, like, straight-to-video, something kind of hit. You know, and became a big one. And I think it'll probably happen with Slender Man, too.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's not long before we have a big Hollywood to-do.
Definitely. And I'm interested in it. I mean, I think it could be really good. I think what's cool about the Slender Man thing, because it's kind of a folklore-y thing, is that you can hear all different tales and stories, and I don't think, you know, the guy's concern about it being ruined makes any sense, because it's modern folklore. You're going to hear all different types of stories. And I like that, you know? I mean, I think that's what makes it kind of interesting. Because there's a mystery around it. Like, is it really a thing? It's kind of like Sasquatch, in a way. You know, what does Sasquatch look like? Where does he live? Is he in the Pacific Northwest? Is he in, Pennsylvania? I don't know. But
right.
it's definitely interesting to me. Or like the Loch Ness Monster. Any of these, like, you know, obviously Slenderman's a man. Well, not really a supernatural being, but he's more of a man-looking character. But at the same time, he's still the same thing as far as, like, being this otherworldly thing that lives somewhere and torments people, and there's different types of stories, and I dig that. So I'm mostly, what this movie did for me, mostly, was introduce me to Marble Hornets, which I've checked out some of their stuff, and I dig. And it also got me more hyped for this documentary that's coming out. And I'm a documentary nerd, so I'm very stoked on that. And so when that comes out, I'll definitely be talking about that, too, because that's interesting to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm big on true crime as well. So.
Yeah, we've seen, and you know, definitely, so my wife and I, that's one thing we do watch a lot together, is tons of true crime stuff. Like, you know, all the different TV shows, like Staircase and Making a Murderer and all that, you know. And then movies and reading stuff. It's just kind of ridiculous. But so, again, I guess I'll go to Stash or Trash, and I'll start with you. Stash or Trash it?
Stash, because just like you, I own it.
Well, obviously, I didn't own it until last week, but I did purchase it, so it's obviously in my stash. So, kind of two for two today, but in different ways. I think the Marble Hornets movie is one that I legitimately really like, whereas Swamp Thing is, like, fun schlock that I'll rewatch because it's fun.
Right.
Not because I necessarily think it's good, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense. Fun fact, right, though, Slender Man, like, in the Always Watching, is played by Doug Jones.
I noticed that. And that's funny to get a name like Doug Jones to play a character who's safe you never see.
Yeah.
And
that's a little notoriety.
The cast is pretty phenomenal. It really is phenomenal,
yeah,
cast when you look at it. I mean, and they did a great job. And, you know, kind of speaking of the found footage thing, too, is it's only loosely related, but, you know, getting into a little bit of what other kind of stuff I've watched in the last couple of weeks. I rewatched Cloverfield in anticipation of 10 Cloverfield Lane. And I actually find Cloverfield to be a really solid found footage movie, too. You know, I could probably count, well, probably, there's probably maybe up somewhere in the 5 to 10 range of movies that would qualify under found footage that I would say I really enjoy. And then the rest of them I can kind of take or leave, or maybe even leave. But rewatching Cloverfield for the first time since I bought it, and I bought it because it was $1.99 at a Blockbuster going out of business sale. And yeah, so I haven't watched it since, you know, maybe it was a year or two old, and it was a good rewatch. And then I also saw 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I thought was phenomenal and a completely different style movie, but really great.
And it's got Alexander Breckenridge in it, doesn't it?
It does. It does indeed.
Yep.
But the 10 Cloverfield Lane movie was really interesting as well, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody, so I'm not going to talk a ton about it, but it's definitely it's more of your Hitchcockian thriller than it is your typical horror movie. Definitely not found footage in any way, so shot more traditionally. But it's essentially a cast of three with a few other people kind of in it. Really, really, really strong performance from especially Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Goodman, who's a national treasure as far as I'm concerned. So,
hey, you cut up with Roseanne for a very long time.
You know, one of the funniest tweets I ever saw, no, maybe I'm exaggerating a little, but one of the funniest tweets I've seen in a week or two, I saw somebody tweet, that was the weirdest Roseanne episode I've ever seen, hashtag 10 Cloverfield Lane. And I just was cracking up. definitely, he did put up with Roseanne for a long time, and he was the only reason I think I could watch Roseanne, because I love John Goodman. But what else? What have you watched in the last couple weeks since I've talked to you, besides the movies that we talked about already?
Good question. I mean, I've been keeping up with Walking Dead, of course, because
yes. And as soon as the season's over, I think I'm going to start marathoning through so that, like, I can be at the point where, like, next season I can actually watch it when it's on, so.
Yeah, you should. You should catch up. Let's see. What else have I watched? You know, I don't feel like I've watched anything crazy. I've been replaying Fallout 3.
Okay.
Which has some legitimately, you know, freaky moments considering you're in a, you know, a wasteland.
Yeah.
Where there's giant scorpions and mutants that come around the corner and scare the bejesus out of you.
Well, it sounds creepy to me, and it sounds like it definitely falls into the realm of horror. I definitely have heard good things about that game. Are you one of the people who's really stoked on checking out Hardcore Henry when it comes out?
I gotta admit, I don't know anything about Hardcore Henry.
So Hardcore Henry is a film that's completely a gamer film. It's essentially it's a first person shooter as a movie. And so it's not like, you know, oh, handy cam, you know, whatever. No, it's legitimately like first person shooter as a movie. And the character Hardcore Henry is like this guy who dies, and his wife or fiance or whatever the heck she is like some scientist, and like, you know, resuscitates him with like half robot him and whatever. But then the government's like after his the technology that had saved him, so like they're after him. And so I'm pretty sure that's like the basis. The preview, while the movie looks really, really cool, kind of made me nauseous. Because it's super, like, I was seasick. Like, I was just, you know, you're moving around. Like when you're in a really fast first-person shooter, when you're in a first-person shooter, I think the reason it doesn't bother me as much is that I'm the one controlling where it goes. So I'm like kind of expecting where I'm going. A little bit more, whereas with the preview, I kind of didn't feel that. While I expect to see it, I don't think I can take it in a theater. I think it's too much for me. Like, I just think that I legitimately feel like I'd be seasick. But it looks really cool, and I think for the gaming world, a lot of people, especially if you're into the first-person shooter thing, would probably really dig it. It looks like a really interesting movie.
I don't know. Like, I'm not super big into first-person shooters. I love Doom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the original two games and then the third one. But I'm looking very much forward to the newest Doom that's coming out very soon. And I like the Halo games and, like the story behind Halo and all that jazz and, you know, the Red versus Blue series, but I'm like, I want to play Call of Duty like ever. And I'm not a huge first-person shooter. And as far as, like, the motion sickness stuff goes, I'm terribly motion. I get that terribly. Like, I don't know if I could watch it. Like,
so
probably
you'll probably, like me, maybe wait till it's on, you know, VOD and watch it in pieces, you know, where you can pause it and take a break.
So that's probably
that's where I'm going to need to do. And I'm not even that motion sick, but the preview definitely made my wife and I go, wow, I don't know if I could watch it, because we both like looked at each other when we watched the preview and both thought it looked cool, but don't think we could watch it like for that exact reason. It's definitely an interesting concept. You know, you brought up Doom. I was, that was back in the, you know, original Doom was back in the days where I was actually into gaming. So I remember Doom really well. I was actually one of the people who played, Castle Wolfenstein and Wolfenstein 3D on, my 286, which were predecessors to Doom. Of course they were on my 286 computer, so they were like, the graphics were, you know, I mean, NES looked better than the graphics on that probably, but that's okay. I played that pretty regularly when I was younger, and so I definitely was into first-person shooters for a little while. I definitely also was into GoldenEye for a hot minute on N64, because people when I went to college with would all play it in the lounge and have like tournaments, so I got into it just to like play. So that was pretty fun. But that was probably GoldenEye is probably the last first person shooter I've played. So I'm a little behind. And speaking of gaming movies, I keep seeing a lot of ads for Warcraft. I can't decide what I think of the the previews for it. I mean, I think it could be really cool. I remember playing Warcraft, like not World of Warcraft, but I remember playing like the original Warcraft, and I remember liking it a decent amount. And I know that this is supposed to be like, in a sense, based on the original kind of world and concept. I mean, they're all kind of based off the same concept. It intrigues me. It looks like you're maybe just a traditional fantasy film in a lot of ways, and I think that I might want to see that. I don't know. Have you followed that at all?
I know. I'm aware of it. My dad is a huge like World of Warcraft, Warcraft guy,
okay.
And he plays a lot of MMOs and shit. So I'm, you know, aware of the culture and all that, but I cannot get into MMOs because they're just so time consuming. And there's people in like Japan who've like died playing this game that they never got up to use the bathroom.
Ugh.
Or
wow. Yeah, so I'm glad I'm not into that world. But but yeah, there's definitely in the horror world though. There's definitely some other films that I'm really interested in that are coming out. One that I would definitely want to see that's coming out is Green Room. I think it looks really phenomenal. It's about a punk band who plays at this venue in the middle of nowhere that turns out to be owned and operated by these neo-Nazis, and they clash with them, and yeah, they clash with them, and it becomes like a bloody get out of here alive kind of movie. The punk band is like Anton Yelchin. And why am I going blank on who else? Mark Webber, who's from Scott Pilgrim. He's the guitarist and lead singer. And Alia Shawkat, who's you know, in Whip It, and she was people know her for Arrested Development.
I definitely know her from Arrested Development.
Yeah. So they're the three that I remember that are in the punk band, and then the actual neo-Nazis are run by Patrick Stewart.
What? That sold
right.
it for me.
Yeah. So, you know, and he's perfect. He looks like a nice, he can play a neo-Nazi. He's bald. He's an old, you know, he could definitely be the guy who, like, leads a bunch of young, you know, foot soldiers. I just see it. So I was told last year about it because it played at Fantastic Fest. And writing for a film site, a lot of people I know are go to all the festivals and stuff, and you know, they told me, like, multiple people saw it immediately and were telling me, like, this is your kind of movie, this is you, because I'm a punk rock kid and I love my, you know, my horror, and you put those together and I'm happy. So I definitely am really looking forward to that, and I think it comes out sometime in April, so I'm very excited that that's coming out. And pretty much that's the only thing on the horizon that I can think of that that I'm stoked on. But speaking of on the horizon, we're going to be going into another round soon in the next movie. Yeah. And we decided to go with a theme this time, which not exactly your cup of tea, but this particular theme is kind of cult in the occult. But you still picked a great film for it, so I'm really stoked on the film you picked. We're going to be watching Don't Look Now towards, like, I think the middle of the round, which is a really great film. A really great film. And I think
it's got like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes or something like that.
Yeah. And it's and you get to see, speaking of 90%, you get to see probably over 90% of Donald Sutherland, so that's pretty cool.
and Julie Christie.
And Julie Christie, yeah. There's a really intense sex scene in that movie. It's a great film though. I mean, I watched it again this October when I was watching just 1,000 movies this October. So definitely a great film. Looking forward to that. And there's a lot of great picks. And I'm hoping that some of the people who picked it that we didn't get to have on the podcast yet will get to come on in the next round. Some new people that are new faces to the club have been commenting the last, you know, several weeks, and they've kind of joined us in picking some flicks. Unfortunately, our two of our three fearless leaders from before have decided to take a round off, but Adam's still sticking around and picked the film. And I picked the film for St. Mort because he hates it, and I just decided to pick Starry Eyes because he always complains about it. So I threw that at the end just to, you know, he's not going to watch it anyway, so I don't know why I did, but you know, it is what it is. I like the film, so maybe that's why I wanted an excuse to pick two this round.
I've not seen it, so it'll be awesome. A new experience for me.
Cool. So we'll announce next week when we get to the next round our best films from this round. We're going to choose a best and a worst, and we're going to also announce the fan favorite selection, you know, viewer's choice, whatever you want to call it. So we've got some folks' votes in already, and hopefully I get a few more, and we'll be able to announce those. And those all will come with prizes. And additionally, I have to announce a couple prizes because we had a contest on the last episode.
We did.
And, yeah, and we only got a few entries, but the top two are getting prizes. Don, who was unable to be with us, is our winner. The first one who entered, and he got everything right from our answers. So way to go, Don. And you win a year subscription to GrindhouseChannel.com.
Sweet.
And, yeah, it's pretty sweet. They're actually, what's really cool about Grindhouse Channel is they are in the process of upgrading their entire system. So right now it's kind of pretty standard, you know, just point, click, watch a movie. But they're adding kind of a lot of new features. It's I'm really excited by the direction they're going. I have a episode of my other podcast where I got to talk to the founder of that site, and I've been watching the shows, movies on the Roku channel that they have a lot lately, and it's exactly what it's called, the Grindhouse Channel. They have a good selection of horror, a really good selection of martial arts films, and then a lot of just weird cult stuff. So it's definitely a fun channel if you're into that kind of stuff. So Don, that's congratulations. And there's another individual who's actually not a Redditor, but he listens to the podcast, named Theo. And Theo is going to be winning a piece of jewelry, which is a Friday the 13th necklace made by an artist named Mike Drydell, who sent us some stuff to give away. So that was really cool of him, and I really hope Theo digs that, whether he keeps it for himself or gives it to, you know, a friend or a significant other, you know, whatever, you know. Hey, it's a cool little piece of jewelry, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's Jason on a medallion on a nice necklace. So, hey.
I'm jealous, Theo.
So, pretty cool stuff. I appreciate you guys entering. And Anna, do you have any last-minute words or thoughts for the listeners?
Yeah, if you started following any of the stuff over on the Farsighted, I've got a new Peeps article coming out soon, guys.
Yes,
if you like candy.
Yes. I'm excited. We're two in so far. We're going to be the third of I Came for the Peeps, which is part of I Came for the Food, which
mm-hmm.
is your new column. And I think a lot of these peeps sound really interesting to me. And I have not gone out and picked up any yet. I need to, because Easter's next week, so I don't
it
know.
It is.
If
you
want to
try any of them,
yeah,
you got to get it done. so I'm going to be wrapping up like a bunch of them in the next couple of articles just to round out the Easter thing. And then I'm going to talk to you guys about watermelon Pop-Tarts.
Nice. I have not had a watermelon Pop-Tart, but I am excited to hear about it. So,
and you will.
Awesome. Well, Anna, thanks, and everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Next week, guys. Slender Man, to him it's part of the fun. Slender Man.